Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. Doesn't matter who you are or where you are, for the next few minutes, we're going to help you out, help you improve your game, help you improve the game of others if you happen to be a coach. And speaking of coaches, there's three of us here. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And helping me to help you are two of the very best cricket coaches that I could get my hands on at a short notice. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. How are you, Garris?
Very well, thank you. Just watching a game that's just started, actually. Gloucester Gypsies are a good team, actually. They've got loads of overseas players that are playing in it, and a lot of good Premier League cricketers taking on our Mayors 11 out there, and the score is 13 for 1 off 6. Sun shining, ball swinging a little bit, slightly overhead conditions, good pitch.
Yeah, we'll get your analysis as the game goes on, Garris. Painting pictures with words, as always. And secondly, is the head of cricket performance at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. Have I finally got it right?
Yeah, I think you nailed it, actually. Yeah, well done. Yes. You were born to do it, David, weren't you? Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, David. Enjoying the summer. We're nearly at half term already. It's amazing. Time's flying by.
Yeah. Lots of cricket. Lots of cricket gone. Lots of cricket still to come, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Loads going on.
And as you guys are both sort of heavily involved in school cricket, and I do my thing at club level, one of the questions that has popped into my mind this week is the coach's role in especially young players, I suppose, who seem to have a little bit of talent, a little bit of ability, but they're not quite developing at the pace that you would hope that they could, or even perhaps they're going backwards a little bit in some way or another. So where I want to get your opinions on this. What is the coach's role in that? When you see sort of the classic line is, oh, he's throwing it away. You know, he's got all this talent, he's throwing it away. When you come across a player who you could put into that category, what happens next?
Well, the first thing I'd say depends really on what stage of their journey they're on, because never has a player gone on a linear development line. You know, there's always peaks and troughs and dips and speed bumps or whatever you want to call them that come along. So at the age group that Sam and myself are predominantly coaching now, you'd expect them to have times where they're going to come off of that perfect line, and you want them to have that because it gives them an opportunity to learn some very important things for their ongoing development, things such as, you know, resilience and perspective come in when things aren't very good, like an injury, or maybe they've fallen off in their training or whatever, and getting them back onto that is a really valuable thing that they can take into their future life. So to me, it's about where they are. I wouldn't expect anybody to continually develop at a similar rate all the way through their development phase into a potential career in club cricket or even beyond into professional cricket, because it never works like that. So that's my first thing on that. I think for me, it's people throw it away when their behaviours don't add up. So we've got a couple of things going on at the moment with what people would consider to be talented players. They're both on England pathways, and yet they do some silly things often outside of cricket, which doesn't help them. I've had to leave somebody out of a game of cricket or two games of cricket in the last 2 days because of their behaviours inside and outside school, which aren't what we're looking for. And as a result, they've missed the opportunity to play in front of two England selectors over the course of the last 2 days. And that is the consequence of not doing the right things. And that could be perceived, I suppose, as them throwing it away. But equally, as long as they learn the lessons, they'll create that opportunity further along. So I'm just looking for those guys in particular to learn some lessons. So to me, you're only throwing it away if you continually do the same thing wrong and you don't learn your lessons.
Levis, there's often when I come across a situation with a young player who's perhaps some kind of behaviour is not going in the way that you would hope it would, and perhaps it's even affecting other people. You always get the old guard coming in and going, oh well, it's not a problem. Just give them a clip around the ear and tell them to stop messing about, and if they don't sort themselves out, then they're out. It's a bit of an old school way of doing it, but it's perhaps a little bit more nuanced than that. And but how do you deal with that situation where you have guys whose behaviours aren't matching up with what you would hope and expect?
Well, it's very difficult, and it is always a situation that is easier to manage from the outside if you're not actually in the position of having to do it. So looking on from being an observer, it's very easy to go do this, do that, do the other thing and fix it, and it'll work out rosy. But in reality, it's not going to happen that way. So Gary has made the really good point is of the people are going to make mistakes. People get things wrong, and we will encourage people to work through those processes, and it's the repetitive nature of these things that becomes a problem. How do you manage them, and how do you stop them happening is a very, very difficult thing. I guess it's for some people it's having a bit of clarity on where you set your expectations and what you deem to be a mistake. So for some people, especially in a school environment like this, some people's mistake might be Gareth has obviously had an incident where something has happened and it's caused him to miss out a couple of games. There's obviously a mistake in there somewhere. At certain schools, he would have got away with that. In certain crew clubs, he would have got away with that. At others, he might have been treated even more severely. So the first thing we've got to do is we've got to know where our boundaries are, and players need to know what their expectations are of them. And if they do understand them and then they are making mistakes, then you're kind of into the one-to-one communication with him and trying to find out what the reason behind the behaviours is. And it might be that there's something that is lacking in motivation towards what you believe or what they sort of suggest they want to achieve, and they're not actually as motivated as they thought they were or as you thought they were. Or it might be that there are issues going on beyond the cricket field, which is often the case. There are things, whether they're social things going on, or they're struggling with things within the classroom at school or at home or whatever it might be. So there are a number of things that you've got to kind of roles you've got to fill as a cricket coach in this environment, and not all of it is making someone better at hitting a ball through the covers. A lot of it is managing them as they're growing up and they're young people, and it can be with some of them it'd be very easy, you can just say that the things need to improve and they'll change, but with some of them they need a lot more time. It's a long game to try and get them adapted to the kind of behaviours that you want to have installed in all your players.
And getting to the root of someone's motivations is a good thing as well, isn't it? Because some people missing a match is you know, the worst thing that could happen, almost. You know, it's terrible, and that kind of threat is sometimes enough to deal with it, or that kind of outcome if as you said, Gareth, you know, if someone's behaviour doesn't change, and then, you know, you have to do something. But I always think that you want to, as much as possible, you want to minimise that kind of idea of punishment. I feel like that's, you want it to be around, but a lot of people take that as the first route. Oh, you know, just drop him. You know, just stop. Just tell him he can't come to training anymore. Just tell him to join another club. And actually, those kind of disincentives through discipline are not brilliantly effective, and they don't get you to where you want to be with that player. So it's almost, to me, it's almost like a last resort, and you try everything you can before you get to that point. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I'd say that particularly in the case that I've spoken about, that's exactly what we've done, David. We've gone through a process of self-awareness. We've gone through a process of robust meetings and rigorous management, and yet similar mistakes continue to be made, which has now led us to the point where the only course of action is for that person to miss games of cricket, and as a result, miss the opportunity to impress in front of national selectors, which probably is going to hurt that person more than missing the game of cricket, to be brutally honest with you. And so it should, in some ways, because he's worked really hard to get himself into a point where he can score runs enough that the national selectors want to have a look at him. But if you don't get the overall package right, then you don't deserve to you have the opportunity to score runs in front of any national selectors. But we've been through that process. So I think, you know, the important thing is to be consistent with that, isn't it? And it's not just because it's him. He's gone through the same process as everybody else. We've been rigorous. We've been consistent. And as a consequence, we've got to the point that we have. And, you know, the other crucial thing is to make sure that they understand what the pathway to come back from it is as well. Because you don't just want to shut the door and keep it shut. You go, well, this is what we're doing for now, because this, the consequence of your actions is that. Great catch, by the way, full-length diving catch off our opening bowler. Fantastic. You know, you've got to make sure that they know what they can do to get back into a situation where they can be selected, that they can get back into a situation where we give them a bit of credibility again, and back into a situation where they can have national selectors come and watch them again. So whilst it's great to shut the door, we need to give them the pathway back, and that's often the best way to manage somebody through these speed bumps, you know, and hopefully they are speed bumps because they learn the lesson through the rigorous and robust management and come out the other side a better person for it.
And if you do get to the root of someone's motivations and you know, get to the core of what they are, then you can hopefully cut those things off before you even get to that point. And that's really the best way to go about it, isn't it? Sort of, you know, nip it in the bud is one way of putting it. But, you know, maybe that's an old bit too over-disciplinary. But do you know what I mean? It's kind of like if you have the right carrot, then you don't need very much stick.
I would agree with that to a point, but what can happen is if you get to the point where you've managed it before a consequence, and yet that thing keeps reappearing, you're better off letting it get to the consequence to learn the lesson. You know, and that's no different in parenting, isn't it? You know, that many listeners around the world will get. We can try and get to that point of niceness where there's an adult conversation, even if it's between a parent and a child. But actually, if it keeps occurring, if the same thing, the history keeps repeating itself, then the lesson isn't being learned. And that's the benefit of consequence, because nobody likes stopping somebody from playing cricket or missing practice. None of us like doing that. It's the complete opposite of what we're looking for in life. However, if we have to go through that process for that person to learn the lesson, to adopt some better behaviours which then allows them to be successful, then in my view, so be it.
Okay, time for some questions now. And how this works is a couple of questions have been sent in by listeners to the show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can email us with your question by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or there are other ways to get in touch with us, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And this week, it comes as no surprise, third time lucky perhaps, it's Torpedo Thompson first up. Welcome back, Torpedo.
Can we have his full name?
He's actually Tony the Torpedo Thompson.
He is, yeah. The V is in there. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's 40s. Just count them up. I count them up then.
And Tony the Torpedo Thompson says, "Good day. I've been listening to the podcast and I have a question more on the psychological side of the game. The question is, what causes performance anxiety or fear of failure, and what are some ways to deal with them?"
It's a brilliant question. Absolutely awesome. In fact, all your questions have been brilliant, Torpedo, over the weeks. But this one is fantastic, because there's probably no cricketer or no sportsman that's ever played the game that hasn't experienced this, you know. And if there's anybody listening to this that has never experienced some form of anxiety before performance, then I would be very, very surprised. And often this sort of stuff happens when, you know, I remember being as nervous for playing club cricket as I was for playing professional cricket and county first class cricket, sometimes even more so. And that fear of failure thing I think you refer to was definitely relevant in my world of playing club cricket, because I felt that I was expected to do so well when I played club cricket, whereas when I was playing professional cricket and when I was playing first class cricket on those few rare occasions, I was often playing with people who were expected to do well, and I sort of was there, you know, to not make the numbers up, but I wasn't expected to be the big fish then at that point. But so I used to get really nervous when I was one of the bigger players in the team, playing at a level that some would perceive being, you know, under my optimum level of performance. So that used to be really interesting for me to try and manage. And one of the reasons why people get anxious is because we are often being judged or observed by others.
I think there's two kinds of anxiety, really. There's the type that you have something you can do about, and the type which you have nothing you can do about. And I think the difference between people who are good at dealing with anxiety is that they recognise the difference between those things, and they can accept that they're going to be anxious about, oh, what if I get a really good ball, the first ball that I face? You know, there's not really much I can do about that. If I nick it because I'm in brilliant form, you know, and the wicketkeeper performs a brilliant catch, I haven't had a lot of control over that. And then there's the other type of anxiety, which is I feel like I'm out of my depth here, and I feel like I haven't done enough to deserve to be in this situation, and I don't back my skills enough to be able to do it. And I don't know what you think, Lavers, but I feel like if you build up that confidence of the stuff that you can control, then you can absolutely have no anxiety about that side of things, and then you can accept the other side of it and say, well, I am going to feel nervous and I am going to feel anxious about these other things because there's nothing I can do about them, but that's okay as well.
Yeah, and there are going to be, inevitably, if you're going to succeed as a cricketer, you're going to put yourself to a level that at some stage is beyond the performance level you're used to. If you're always playing within your comfort zone, then you're probably not getting very far because you're not going up and up the ladder as you probably want to. I always remember one of the players I played with many, many years ago who had some little coping strategies for him, which were not necessarily anxiety, but they worked very, very well in the same way. And cricket's one of those games where you can develop more and more anxiety throughout the game just because of the little pockets of time that are afforded to you. And something can happen, you can face a ball, and then you've got 30 seconds to think about it, and you've got that big fast bowler going back and he's walking back, and you're getting some chat from the slips, and the crowd might be getting, and suddenly it's just building up more and more and more, and that time that's available is very, very important in raising those anxiety levels and making you feel a little bit less in control. And I guess what you're looking to do is return to an environment as much as you can where you are in control. And one of the things that we've looked at is just having routines between balls, not just routines in terms of pre-delivery, but routines in terms of what you do between each ball, so you can go away to a place where you feel comfortable and relaxed. And I remember one of the guys I played cricket with many years ago, and when I was, he was the overseas player at my club actually, and then when I went and played in Perth, he was at the same club as well, and he was a guy called Corey Whiston. He was opening batter, and he was, I guess, 20 years of old playing first grade cricket, and he had a routine. So all that time that was between balls, which for some people is nervous, anxious, whatever you want to call it, he used that and controlled that time as best he could. He did that just by, he'd walk away, he had a tally on the pitch next to him on the floor of how many balls he'd face. So he'd walk away, he'd scratch a line on the floor, he'd go lean on his back, he'd look at the same tree every single ball, and just zone himself away and take himself away from the pitch, look at a distant object, and looking at a distant object is usually quite a good way to relieve stress rather than having something in your face. And that routine was something that he could control every ball. So the time between balls was something he was in complete control of, and that was the time that would often bring on the anxiety. So by dominating that little period of time of 15, 20 seconds, he was able to really control his mood and control his concentration, how he felt.
There's going to be a bit of anxiety out here because Gloucester Gypsies are 21 for 3 off 11. So the next batter walking in a second, which might be one of my mates, actually. And if it is, there's definitely going to be some anxiety because he's been saying to me that he's brought the best team down ever from Gloucester Gypsies, and they're going to have to be the best bowling side ever by the looks of things. there's a bit of anxiety. It isn't him, but I can see that this lad is anxious. So I'm going to see it in reality straight in front of me today, and it'll be interesting to see what is routines in between each ball? Because Sam is right, you know, that's a great way of doing it. And Nick Compton, who's somebody who's learned how to concentrate brilliantly, has used his pre-delivery routine to do two things in his career. One is to make sure that he can maintain his concentration over a period of time by chunking it and having that routine to break his concentration and then to restart it just before he goes into his stance. But also, he uses it to make sure that he's emotionally ready. He calls it emotional readiness to face each ball. And he'll only go back in when he's ready. Now, obviously, if you're anxious, and let's think about his test career, he'd have been anxious virtually in every ball he faced in his test career because he was never a certainty in the team and was always somebody who was trying to battle their way into the side. Even when he was in it, he was trying to retain his place. His ability to go away and then come back in, use his breathing appropriately, which I know he worked on a lot, gave him an opportunity to deal with anxiety and ultimately put down a performance on as many balls as he can. If he ever felt that he wasn't emotionally ready to face the ball, then you would see him take an extra little bit of time before he went back into his crease. Now, obviously, if you're completely and utterly out of your depth, which is what you talked about earlier, David, then the chances of you being ready emotionally for any ball is going to be pretty limited, and it's a horrible place. And trust me, I felt that on a couple of occasions facing fast bowling in particular, where I felt as if I didn't have the skills to be able to deal with an Akhtar or an Akram or whatever the case may be. And that's not a fun place to be. But what I do know is that with every ball I faced off those guys, not that I faced many, but every ball I faced off those guys, I felt as if the game was getting slightly easier. They were still too good for me, and they both got me out. But you know, I felt as if the game got easier with every ball, and I think we all have to remember that. So perspective is really important for me. Having a routine is really important. Using your breathing, which is our most natural thing that we do in life, because we all do it every minute on a repeated basis. But learning how to skillfully use that when you're feeling anxious is really important. And that just having a bit of perspective as well also helps.
Next question is from Subrat. And Subrat says, I cannot leave my studies for cricket because my parents will not allow it. So when I finish school, how do I choose a college that can provide me with the best sports facilities? And what should I do to get admitted into the sports quota of that college?
Well, I suppose it works differently all over the place and how people get to universities and colleges in the first place. But if you're not going to be playing a huge amount of cricket leading into you going to university, it's probably unlikely that any university is going to turn around and say, oh, come and do your studies here because we want you to play cricket, purely because you haven't done enough of it, you haven't put together enough performance, and you probably aren't the name on the tip of their tongue. Because generally you need to be in order to get that sort of preferential spot, which is more and more difficult to come by now because more and more people are going to college and university all over the world. But what I would do is I'd research all of the courses that you want to do, make sure that you go to a university that can deliver those courses, and then cross-reference probably the sports facilities or the cricket facilities or the cricket coaching that they have available to you. And then when you get there, get yourself to the first ever trial, get yourself to the first set of nets, put yourself in the shop window, and then show what you've got when you're there. I think it's difficult to expect somebody to offer things to you if you haven't been playing a huge amount beforehand, because there'll be other people that are who will be on the tip of their tongue and you might not be. But when you get there, it's a fantastic opportunity without the pressure of having parents dictating to you the opportunity to use the facilities, use the coaches, and then build yourself up that ladder whilst you're there. And that would be my advice to you.
Yeah, it sort of depends where he is, Subra is academically, and where he is in his sporting performance to the answer to that question, isn't it, Lavis? I mean, you know, if you need to find a route in, then you sort of need to play to your strengths, don't you?
Absolutely. I went through the process actually go through it most years with a lot of lads, because we do get a lot of guys at our school who are academically fairly strong and are decent cricket players as well, and they're hunting out the best sort of avenue for them. And One boy in particular, isn't a boy from our school, but a lad I've worked with for a number of years now from Ireland, who's had exactly that dilemma. He wanted to come over to England and get as good an education as he could, but he really wanted to be in a university that was going to deliver a lot for him from a cricket point of view. And he did exactly word for word what Gareth has suggested there. He made a list of the universities that suited his academics, he made a list of the universities that suited his cricket, and then started cross-referencing the two until he came up with a shortlist. Once he had a shortlist, he then did a little bit of research in terms of speaking to a few people, so I was able to put him onto a few guys who'd been to the universities who were cricketers. And he managed to get a bit of contact with those guys, and also went and visited them and met the coach and looked at the facility. So it's very daunting when you start with 100, 200, however many colleges and universities there are that are on offer for you. But if you make your lists and set out your objectives of what you want to do and what the necessities are, you'll find that very quickly that list will get shorter and shorter, and then you might get down to half a dozen options, if not less, and you can then go and have a look at them, or you can go and specifically target people who are going to help you. So that is exactly the way I would do it. How that differs around the world, there are going to be more or less opportunities, but I'd say the process wouldn't change. You'd do exactly the same thing regardless if there are thousands or just a dozen universities there.
I completely agree, Sam. I think that's a fantastic sort of roadmap for anybody, really, irrespective of where you are in the world. And also the anxiety levels here at Millfield have gone up again because it's 21-4.
Oh, pressure now.
Oh my God, is your mate coming out?
No, he's got out of his chinos and he's now in his cricket white, so I'm expecting him in at some stage.
Well, they're four down already. I hope he bowls.
Not from what I've seen in the past.
It's a sight to see when a team are four down for not many, and the next guy strolls in with his bat over his shoulder, and you think this could be interesting.
Yeah,
rather than nervously shuffling up to the crease.
It's Millfield though. It's not often anyone goes past 120 at Millfield, is it?
No, it's not flat here at all.
Never
flat. I promise you, the wickets this year, I don't know what it's been like with you guys, but the wickets have been unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been pretty
proper
good.
Cricket wickets. So, you know, you can get wickets on it because good bowlers get rewarded. And we've presently got a guy bowling who, we've got speed guns out today. So we've got two of our opening bowlers have hit 77 mile an hour virtually every ball that they've bowled effort, which is great for 16-year-old kids, which is great. We've got an off spinner on at the moment who's bowling fantastically in county age group cricket and in school cricket at the moment, and there's bounce in the wicket. So when there's bounce in the wicket, you get rewarded as a good bowler. But equally, if you bowl in absolute filth, then you get punished, don't you? And that's what I'm loving about our wickets at the moment. I'm sure there's a number of people around the UK that are experiencing that because we've been very dry, haven't we?
Oh yeah. Well, our first team's average score this year is 223. And bearing in mind, last year it was 150. You can tell you the difference between...
It's the coaching, David. It's the coaching.
Yeah, exactly. It's all obviously about what you're doing obviously for it, mate.
Yeah, obviously. That's the main thing. And we got a game on the weekend on another sort of very, very good pitch at Stirling. Being overlooked by the Wallace Monument. Beautiful.
Oh, beautiful.
Very nice.
And that is about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we head off, there's one more thing we need to do, which is decide on the winner of the competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And it's Torpedo Thompson first up. He's got his question about anxiety, fear of failure, and Subrat's question about playing cricket once he's finished school. Which one, Gareth, did you prefer this week?
Can I just interject for a second here, please, guys? Because if Nicholas Torpedo Thompson wins, which is his name, I will accept your friend request on Facebook. However, if you do not win, I am pressing delete. So, and this is a one-time only. So, Gareth, over to you.
I think it's that's just my anxiety levels have actually just gone up now as a result of that, Sam.
I'm breathing.
Hold on. You're going to have to wait for 10 minutes whilst I centre myself.
I'm hovering over both buttons.
Well, Torpedo, the bell tolls, really, and it is time for you to be the winner. It's a fantastic question, mate. You can now be friends with Sam, you lucky lad. You must be very pleased with yourself as a result. But fantastic question. And there isn't anybody listening to this that wouldn't benefit from the answers that we gave, because it's very, very normal to suffer anxiety when we play any sport.
The relief is palpable here.
It is, isn't it?
It just goes to show what perseverance does in life and on this podcast. Now, Gareth, I think that's probably enough, Torpedo. But if there's somebody else out there listening to the show wanting to send in their question, how could they get in touch with us?
They can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, you can get that through social media as well. You can get us through the Pitch Vision social media system at pitchvision.com. You can message us through that, free account for you if you want one of those. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and on Twitter at pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week by subscribing. It's free to do that, and you can do that in any podcast catching app. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy there, tap on subscribe, and away you go. You can do it on any device that you happen to have that's connected to the internet. You can also get extra bonus content from the show by going to pitchvision.com, and you'll find a little special podcast bonus section in there that you can get some more stuff from Gareth Levers and myself. And you can get all the old show notes or listen to old shows also on the Pitch Vision website by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Levers.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, guys.